As we press forward in observations for our time, we discovered that the fifth chapter, that the whore of religion worked directly with Shaul, with Paul, the founder of Christianity, to lure the ignorant and the irrational to their death. That's not me being pejorative. That's what God says. Now, over the course of the next several chapters, we're going to consider how Yahweh makes the connection between the whore and religion, between religion and Babylon, and between Babylon and Satan. This will invariably lead to the recognition that the religion God views as the most lethal is the Babylonian, Satanic, Pauline, and Roman faith of Christianity.
Wow. I know this is true. I've been for years, but wow, every time you hear it, you just go. In our culture, that just should blow people away.
All these people that think they're being godly by going to their church, and they're praying to their Jesus, and they have their crosses, if they only knew that that is the religion that God despises most of all. You know, when people tell me, you hate Islam, and you know, you're just not being fair because there's problems with Christianity, and say, well, Islam isn't the religion I hate the most.
No,
I hate Christianity far more than I hate religion. Islam. I mean, Islam is more vicious, but Christianity is responsible for damning far more souls.
More dead souls than anything.
Correct. And with Christianity, the lie is sophisticated.
Yeah.
With Islam, it's just stupid. You know, if you're a Muslim, too bad. I mean, it's just, I don't even pity you. It is so obviously false that if you want to play Muslim, you go right ahead. You're way too dumb for me to waste any breath. Now, in the seventh volume of Yada Yah, which I referenced earlier, we discovered that the most vicious beast in human history evolved from Babylon to become Imperial Rome, and then trampled the world underfoot as the Roman Catholic Church. Now we're about to discover that Christianity generally, and Roman Catholicism specifically, is the whore of Babylon. Satan's principal means of beguiling the religious into worshiping him as their Lord. Satan's sweeping account of the history of his people. Of history of his people. Including predictions regarding their future was penned by Yeshayahu at a very turbulent time. Now, so that we approach this in context and appreciate the timing, 20 years earlier, in 760 BCE, Yonah, a name that's been corrupted to Jonah, had been sent to Nineveh. You know, Nineveh still exists as a city, which was the birthplace of the beast. Nineveh was originally the capital of Babylon, named after Nin. You know what Nin is the Akkadian languages that ultimately became Aramaic became Babylon? You've heard of Nimrod, haven't you?
Nimrod. Yeah,
okay. All right. So, Ninus is named after Nimrod. Nimrod was a violent hunter against Yahweh.
First king.
Samaramis is the wife. She is also called Astarte or Astarte. Yahweh uses Astarte, Queen of Heaven, Mother of God, because one day Nimrod and Ninus mean the same thing. It means of the sun. So the man named of the sun goes and gets killed by a wild boar, and so he gets reborn because his wife, who is scripturally known as Astarte, becomes known as Venus and Isis. She claims that she is impregnated by the sun when the sun is in the constellation of Taurus the Bull, which is the Sunday closest to the spring equinox when Easter is celebrated now, so that 9 months later she could give birth to the son of the sun, and therefore become the mother of God, the queen of heaven, the virgin with child.
Right. And I used to tell Christians this stuff long before I met you.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say, this is really what that is.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd tell them, this is what Christmas is. It's a result of that.
Yeah, that is correct.
And on and on, and they would just say, I don't care what it means. I don't care what the truth is or what you are claiming. It ain't what it means to me.
Yeah.
Don't ruin my Christmas.
Right.
Don't ruin my Easter.
What it means to you is somewhere between irrelevant and condemning.
Yeah.
God says it's an abomination.
Yeah.
He says it's unbelievably stupid. It's the religion he despises the most. And if you're going to practice it, you just need to know the consequence. Yeah, you can have it mean whatever you want to you, but understand that all you're doing by celebrating any aspect of it is pissing God off.
Yeah.
I just might as well lay it out flat. Mm-hmm. You are absolutely precluding yourself from ever having a relationship with him, from him ever hearing anything you have to say, from you ever considering anything he has to say, from ever being part of the covenant or from entering the kingdom. So if you're willing to give all that up, then you can continue to celebrate Christmas. You can continue to celebrate Easter.
Halloween and a few other good ones.
Yeah, absolutely. Have at it. So Nineveh was named after the sun. The son of the sun. This is the birth of the concept of Christianity. It's the only religion that has the son of the sun born on the winter solstice, where the Trinity, the Mother of God, is impregnated 9 months earlier in celebrating Easter, which was actually named after the wife of Nimrod. And all of this it's being presented to you have Jonah going to Nineveh, which is the birthplace of the beast, in order to awaken Gentiles to the message the Israelites had failed to proclaim. So in 750 BCE, Hosea announced the divorce decree, telling the northern kingdom, known as Ephraim, that they had breached the covenant and were no longer Yah's children. Now, this is interesting because what real-world device did Yahweh use to enable Hosea to be a passionate spokesperson against religion? He asked Hosea to do something.
He married a whore.
Right.
He married a whore. Children.
Right. Gomer.
Special names, yeah.
Right. He married a whore named Gomer, who was a temple prostitute. So the whore that he married was a religious whore. And by marrying a religious whore, at Yahweh's instructions, Hosea could speak with authority. He could actually put the pathos, the actual feelings into the words. Yeah, feel the pain. You know, it's why I'm grateful that I was so involved in Christianity. As an evangelist, as a Bible study teacher, as an ordained ruling elder, because of the fact I empathize with people who are beguiled by the religion. I mean, I'm in a position where I can say, this is where you've been hoodwinked. This is the consequence to you, because I've been there.
Yeah.
And that was the way that he did that with Hosea. And Hosea is really important here because the whore that he was asked to marry describes how when Yahweh uses the term of adultery and of being unfaithful, he is speaking of cheating on him and breaking the marriage vows of the covenant.
Yes.
It has nothing to do with sex. It has everything to do with relationships.
Right. You've destroyed it.
Correct.
Can't serve both.
So it's the northern kingdom that is divorced, known as Ephraim, because they had breached the covenant. They were no longer Yah's children. But he does say, you know, there will become a time when you will say, Yahweh is our God, and I will say, you are my children. And that time is coming up on us pretty quickly. It's going to happen in 2033, year 6000 Yah. So that time is fast approaching. Now, shortly after they had breached the covenant and were no longer Yah's children, the most complete and compelling presentation of God's people commenced with the opening salvo of Yeshayah. And that began in 745 BCE. That's an important date to remember.
Mm-hmm.
745 BCE. Announcing that Yehuda was currently in rebellion. This timing is interesting because the Torah was given to Moshe in 1445 BCE. How many years separate 1445 BCE and 745?
I think it's 700.
Yeah, it would be the number.
Big number, sevens.
700 years exactly. Yeshayah is written exactly 700 years after the Torah is given.
Yeah, we don't miss a trick, do we?
Nope. But now I want you to look at what happened in 33 CE. When isn't that the time that Yosha, in year 4000 Yah, fulfilled the first four of the Moed Mikre?
Yes, sir.
How many years is it between 445 BCE and 33 CE, realizing you have to subtract one because there was no
year
one, zero.
Year one, yeah.
Yeah, there's, yeah, it went from year one to year one, BCE one to AD one. So there's no year zero. So 745 to 33.
Yeah.
How many years is that?
777.
777.
Amazing.
Yeah.
He's good.
Oh, he is good.
He's,
I mean,
really
talk
good.
About, I mean, can you imagine the planning, the planning that, yeah, has to go into having the most prolific prophet commence his testimony exactly 700 years after you you hand down your Torah to Moshe and exactly 777 years before you fulfill his promises.
Timing is everything.
No, it gives you goosebumps. I mean, it's just
okay. Cool.
Yeah, that's it. It's
he weaves
it
these little things in. So if you want to, if you really want to look,
if you want to look,
wow.
Yeah, there's a treasure. It's the treasure for you if you're willing to look.
Mm-hmm.
If you're willing to think, I'm going to reward that.
Yes.
So pretty cool. Also interesting when seen in the flow of time. 700 years from the 702 BCE conclusion of the prophetic testimony, Yosha became the living embodiment of Yeshayah's, for unto us a child is born, and unto our behalf a son is given.
Right.
It was from 702 BCE to 2 BCE, which is when Yosha showed up, arrived as the child born to us. You have exactly 700 years. So there's a 700 years going backwards to the Torah, 700 years going forward to the birth that this prophetic revelation in the sixth chapter announces, and 777 years from the beginning of the book
to Passover. Yeah.
To Passover.
Wow.
In 33 CE.
Amazing.
It just is stunning. That just to add some greater dimension to this period, Assyria would destroy the rebellious northern kingdom, enslaving all and all but obliterating 10 of the 12 tribes mm-hmm. of Israel circa 722 BCE is when that occurred. 7 years thereafter, in 716 BCE, Hezekiah would rediscover Yahweh's Torah, celebrating Pesach, Matzah, and Bukurim. 2 weeks late, but for twice the time. You know, there's so many just little things in the Torah and prophets that are big things.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of those things that's a little thing that I think is an enormous thing.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the big thing is, okay, they became Torah observant again, and Yahweh did away with their foes. The all of those Assyrians.
Protected them, like you said,
yeah,
they will.
Right. He protected them. It's just like everything that we read that God says he's going to do. So yeah, that's the profound message. But the little message is that all these people that are fixated on, you know, God isn't is never imprecise. So, you know, you have to know exactly the day that each Mikre is to be celebrated.
And this is my intent to say no.
No, this is, yeah, because Hezekiah went to Yah. He says, we can't do this right on time. And the reason we can't do this right on time is that the whole concept of matzah, and Pesach and matzah are all just rolled into one. And matzah is Pesach, Pesach is matzah. They are, it's the same event.
Yeah.
Leading to a Bukurim. And what matzah represents is separating ourselves from, distancing ourselves from religious and political sin.
Right.
And Yehuda And every place from the temple itself all the way through the entire countryside and every town and village of Yehuda was filled with religious idols.
Right.
False gods. And that's what he's trying to get rid of. The yeast is just a symbol for matzah. That's just a symbol. What the yeast symbolizes is religious and political corruption. And there was way too much of it. And so Hezekiah says, we can't celebrate this in time because we can't get rid of the yeast, all the religious imagery. He said, can I have a two-week extension? Because I need also to train the lowy, now called Levite, how to do this right. I don't have them trained yet, and I don't have the religious, the yeast out of the cupboards. So we'd like a couple of weeks to get our act together.
Yeah.
God said, fine. Got no problem with that.
Yeah.
That's okay.
And then they start celebrating Passover with the stuff. You know,
right. Then they start celebrating. They're having such a good time. You know, it's not a sacrifice. Having such a good time, they say, hey, can we do it another week?
Can we party some more?
Absolutely.
Party hardy.
So that happened, you know, very shortly after this was written. It's this 716 BCE. In the process, and as a direct result, Yah was saved, Yahuda, from the Assyrian conquest. However, then in 702 BCE, Yeshayahu concluded his prophetic revelation by affirming that Yahuda would become religious and rebellious again, predicting that as a result, Babylon would conquer and enslave them. Now, in the sequence of things, Nahum would serve as Yahweh's next prophet, rising to the occasion in 700 BCE. Zephaniah would follow 60 years hence in 640 BCE. Yirmiyah, who was called to prophesy to Gentiles, commenced his revelation in 630, continuing to do so through 600 BCE. Simultaneously, Chabaouk condemned Shaul, the founder of the Christian religion, circa 614 BCE, 666 years exactly.
Wow.
Before the self-proclaimed Apostle Paul penned his letter to the Gentiles.
Galatians.
Yep, Galatians. You know, it's interesting. I was reading some of the commentary about the kingdom. In the book of Acts, you know, it begins with Yosha's last statement to his 11 remaining disciples. And in his last discussion with them, just before the Bukonim version of Yosha was, you know, transformed back into light. Before that light was taken up into the clouds and then up into heaven off of Mount of Olives. He was talking to his disciples. The disciples, they asked, you know, when is the kingdom returning to Yisrael? And he says, it's not for you to know. It's what the Father has decided to do. It's just not for you to know. I mean, what he's saying is, listen, it's going to happen 2,000 years from now. Nothing you can do or say is going to make any difference in anyone's life. Don't be concerned about that. That is well beyond your time. But then he said, what I want you to do is I want you to go to Jerusalem first, and then all of Judea and Samaria, and then to the entire world, and share what I have shared with you. Now, how in the world can Yosha, in his parting comments to those 11, say, I want you to go to the entire world to share my message, and Paul be right when he says that the disciples were limited to Jews, and that he had the entire world.
And pretty much to Jerusalem.
So either Yosha is lying,
mm-hmm.
or Paul is lying.
Right.
Now, one of the two.
We know the history. Matthew and Andrew are down in Egypt. We know mm-hmm. that Thomas is reportedly going all the way to India.
Yeah.
We've got.
Let me ask you a question. Where did Yosha, the risen Yosha, meet with Yahochanan?
Is in Greece, in the Greekland,
just outside of Ephesus, right?
Ephesus.
Where he commended the Ephesians for their for not listening to Paul and for listening to Yael Conant. He didn't tell Yael Conant, "Boy, you really need to get out of this place. I want you to go back home. You need to go back to Jerusalem because you know I've given the rest of the world to Paul." No, he said exactly the opposite.
Yeah.
So you know, if you were thoughtful,
if he went to Rome, then that disputes everything. Paul didn't need to be there.
Correct.
Paul didn't need to be anywhere. He should have been stuck under Rome.
That's correct. So if you're at least a bit thoughtful about any of this, you'd realize that that Paul is bogus. But anyway, 666 years before Paul penned his first letter to the Galatians is when Chabaouk called him out by name and called him the plague of death. Ezekiel, Yachezel, followed it in 595 BCE, providing considerable insight into the next world conflict, the Magog War.
Mm-hmm.
And this will be a 2027 Islamic assault on Israel. This accounting of our future history began in Yeshaya, with the prophet revealing in the 17th and 18th chapters that the war would begin in greater Syria, that it would ultimately lead to the demise of Damascus, to the thinning of Israel at the waist by the forfeiture of the West Bank, to the Islamic terrorists, and to their invasion of Israel, all aided and abetted by none other than the political incarnation of Rome, the institution that also has a Senate, the institution where the head of state is also the head of the military.
Same architecture, too.
Same architecture. The United States of America. Just as Yahweh had foretold, Jerusalem would be sacked by the Babylonians beginning in 601 and continuing through 587 BCE. Daniel's sweeping prophetic vision of human history from that point forward, including how Babylon would morph into Persia, then Greece and Rome, and ultimately trample the whole world underfoot as the beast of the Roman Catholic Church, commenced in 580 BCE. It was actually scribed from inside the Beast of Babel. He would continue to write through 540 BCE, ultimately giving way to Haggai and Zechariah in 520, during which time the temple was rebuilt. Nehemiah followed a century later in 445 BCE. Then the last of Yahweh's prophets, Malachi, presented a vivid portrayal of our immediate future, doing so in 430 BCE. Now, there'd be nothing more from Yahweh during the ensuing four centuries.
And that's tragic.
The books ascribed to the Maccabees during this period provide a historical accounting of battles that were fought between the Jews and the Greeks over religion, over politics. They were not inspired by God. And the books which carry Enoch's name, which were compiled thereafter, are complete forgeries, with troubling similarities to the Quran, and almost as poorly written. So now that we understand the timing of Yahweh's open letter to humankind, let's dive in and listen to what he had to say. The Chazon began, and we're going to provide this in a quick summary, and then we'll dive into each word and analyze it more carefully. The revealing communication of Yeshayahu, salvation is from Yahweh, son of Amoz, the trustworthy and steadfast, whereby beneficially he compiled and revealed a written prophetic record of the covenant relationship concerning Yahudah, meaning related to Yah, and Jerusalem, the source from which teaching and guidance regarding reconciliation and restoration flow. In the days of Uzziah, boldness and empowerment are from Yah. Jotham, Yah was perfect. Achaz, he has grasped hold. And Yachaz, Yah, strengthened by Yahweh. Rulers of Yahudah, the beloved of Yahweh. Now, what grounds these statements in recorded history, providing this history so we can do what we did at the beginning here. We know when these people came into power. And by knowing that, we're in a position to say, this is when this was written.
Right.
And then all we had to do is connect the dots to say, oh, man, that's profound. 700 years hence, 700 years from, 777 years separating.
Mm-hmm.
All comes from the fact that he gave us the timing.
Right.
Well, this is the spiritual realm. And choose of your own accord to pay attention and respond, material realm. Because Yahweh has spoken. Quote, I reared my children, lifting them up, helping them grow, and enabling them to be great. And I raised them, taking them to a higher place. But they have actually rebelled against me. A cow, one who looks, sees what's around him, and views the world from the proper perspective, is aware of and recognizes his creator, the one who gave him birth. And an ass, a stubborn domestic beast of burden, his Lord. Yisrael, individuals who struggle and fight with God, does not know and remains unaware. My people have failed to consider this connection, and thus they do not understand. Wow.
Wow, wow.
Can you imagine hearing that for the first time?
Hearing it correctly.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, you'd be back on your heels. God just said that he did everything he could possibly do as a father for our benefit.
And you don't get it.
Yeah, and you tossed it all away.
Yeah. You know, we were talking about that this morning. Terry and I were doing some gardening. And, mm-hmm. and then I brought up a thing I read on George Bush and how they have, basically, it sounds like they're trying to protect their legacies and their money and mm-hmm. all that sort of thing. And I'm saying, no matter what you these guys can get, I mean, I've always been, unfortunately, buy high and sell low.
But, yeah, yeah.
But this is one time when we both agree that, you know, we paid almost nothing and, yeah. and won the grand prize. I mean,
that's correct. Yeah, that is true. Yeah, it's the ultimate deal here is that
it is the ultimate.
It costs us nothing other than our time, and our time is rewarded. And we gain the universe.
There's nothing you can get out of all this other stuff. This just ain't there.
Yeah. You know? I was going to say the time is kind of an investment. Everything you put in now, you get back later.
Oh, yeah. Then you get eternal time.
Yeah, eternal time. Yeah. You know, I've just been translating a bunch of conversations surrounding the relationship between the city of Dode, Yahweh's home, also on Zion, further up the ridgeline of Moriah, and what Yahweh had to say about Dode. And, you know, what he said, you know, in eternity, you know where Dode's going to sit? Place of honor.
Close, I guess.
Place of honor, right next to God. His home is right next to God's home, and his seat of honor is right next to God. And, you know, in my view, even though the Dode was a rascal, he earned it.
Yep.
Don't envy him in the least, but man, I can't wait to continue to learn from him. If it wasn't for Dode, I wouldn't be here. And not only was the 91st Psalm my introduction to Yahweh, which he scribed, but you know, Dode is the lone individual who took the time to observe the Torah correctly and show us the way to God.
How it's done, yeah.
Yeah, how it's done, you know, which is to observe, to ponder, to come to understand, and then as a result of all of those things, to act upon what you've come to know.
It really gets down to what I figured out early is Shemar Torah and respond appropriately.
That's correct.
It's just that simple. I mean, he didn't ask you to do jump through hoops.
Yeah, Dode David was a very bad boy, hugely flawed. But he's called right, righteous, vindicated by God. Because when it came to understanding and responding to what God had to say, he was right.
Mm-hmm.
So here's the story now in a more amplified form. The revealing communication, this is Chazon, the written prophetic record of the relationship agreement and the covenant contract, enabled by the ability to be perceptive and the vision from Chazah, to see and to perceive, to look intelligently, to observe and to understand. So it's really interesting. The word that Yahweh uses for a prophecy happens to be very similar to the word that he uses to explain how to get to know him, by being observant.